This episode of Football 301, Charles McDonald, Mr. Four Verts, joins me to recap the final week of the 2025 NFL season. Week 18, we start with the Steelers moving on, beating the Ravens. We recap Sunday Night Football, plus three highs, three lows. We talk about both Southern divisions, NFC South derogatory, AFC South complimentary, plus more. As we move on to the playoffs, Myles Garrett set the sack record. That was fun too. Seahawks defense looks dominant. All that week 18. It was a hoot. See you guys in a sec. Hello, and welcome to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. I'm joined by Charles McDonald, Mr. Four Verts, and we're coming to you right after Sunday Night Football. It's time for the late hit. Well, 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 Mr. Rogers, we see you again. The Steelers win 26-24 over the Baltimore Ravens in a very, very entertaining fourth quarter that ends with a little heartbreak as a field goal missed by Tyler Loop to the right after he had the offense move him to the middle after they were on the left hash, which I thought was ironic. But how you doing, Chuck? Good to see you. We saw you a couple hours ago, but good to see you again.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. It was a lot happened in the final like 3 minutes of that game, 4 minutes of that game, because it made up for there was a lot of slop going into it, and then all of a sudden it was just like, oh wait, Lamar, Aaron Rodgers. No, this is fun. It looks good, even though Lamar is obviously still not healthy as he's getting run down by like 300-pound defensive tackles and stuff like that. I mean, just an incredible way to finish that game. And then you get Lamar at whatever percent he's at, 70%, 65%, the dime to Likely, who makes a great grab, and then the kicker just get him out of the game. I don't know. That's not how that said. I don't know.
It was Lamar, nasty. Like, it felt like the superhero play to Zay Flowers was kind of like, that was the exclamation point. Like, hey, he mustered enough to split the two defenders after the Ravens botched another protection. Uncourt points to Zay Flowers, goes for it, hits the touchdown. And then, like, Kenneth Gainwell scores. The Steelers march down. I'll admit, Aaron Rodgers had a couple really nice throws. One to Adam Thielen, one to Freiermuth up the middle. Like, you can see it. It's always in two-minute drills or desperation. Hopefully, we get to see it for a whole playoff game. But Gainwell goes ahead on a touchdown. And I'm just even going through my notes. So this is just hilarious. Because I kept thinking that, okay, this is the game. Little play I'll break down. Okay, no, this will be the play I'll break down. Okay, no, this will be the play I break down. Because it just kept every new play just kept happening. Zay Flowers has another go-ahead touchdown on a really cool design. Tackle over. Bunch of people into the boundary. Fake toss. Everyone against the grain. I think Jalen Ramsey got a little, his nose. They were playing tight. And I think he got a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, got caught looking in the backfield, and then it was like, all right, I think then a lot of the touchdown. Oh my god, I think Patrick Queen was all the way over there. Everybody was.
They had four guys to the boundary. All the way over. The running birds, bro, back way.
My note on that was, it's as simple as football gets. Put a lot of bodies over here and make them run over there, and then fake it going over here. It's like really just really what it was. I love that design. I thought that was. Hey, wow, that was a great hero design, great play, everything, perfect situation to do it, third and one. Then the Calvin Austin touchdown. Stutter and go. You know he's going to take the one-on-one when they're in trips. And Awuzie got targeted a whole bunch. Seven targets, six receptions, gave up 69 yards and a touchdown. Rodgers kept peppering him. I got a story about that later. Nate Herbig had some moments, big moments. Then we got a Keaton Mitchell big return. You mentioned the Isaiah Likely fourth down. And then it ends with Tomlin beating his chest and blowing kisses.
That was perfect.
At the end, which was exactly Mike Tomlin. Yeah. And then the Kyle Hamilton injury was a big thing for the Ravens. Got a little stat about that. But I was just wanting to run by everything that happened because I'm just still kind of catching my breath because it's just a new thing kept happening every 2 minutes.
Yeah, I was just like stunned at like how quickly the pace picked up in this game towards the end. And it was just cool, like, even though the Ravens didn't close the game out, like, it's cool to see that. Dude, even Lamar in his diminished state is one of the best players in the league. Like, even when, you know, he's kind of forcing it and he's pressing and he's not 100%, obviously, he can still go out and make those throws in the fourth quarter that you need. I mean, that was really an incredible performance. Like, all the efficiency numbers, really, like, from his, I think his last couple starts, like, his efficiency numbers are pointing back up to where you need to be, even though you're visually, like, seeing him not be healthy. So for me, like, I'm kind of looking at that as a semi-positive, because we did see him. You know, I know it's been forgotten to time, but we did see him this season, the first month of the season. He had MVP caliber stats. And then in a diminished role, he's still putting up, like, some really, like, MVP caliber efficiency numbers, even though he's obviously not the same player. That should give you a lot of hope for next year. Like, if you can just get healthy, you could be back to having a great offense, and then you're seeing what happens in the draft. Man, that was a great game. One of the plays that got me excited but frustrated as a Dawgs fan was the Malachi Starks drop pick. Because he saw it so fast. And he turned around. And what impressed me, like, as he turned around, he tracked the ball better than Valdez Scantling did. Because he beat him to the spot. Wow. Like, he's kind of cutting down. Not the hardest thing to do, you know? Because he's cutting down and MBS is still running north. But he's, like, just missing out his fingertips. Like, man, like, and that's what it always is with them. They're so close to, like, these big plays all the time. They couldn't get it done. And tonight, just to have it end on a kicker, that sucks. But they need to rest. Like, they need a first-round pick. Yeah. That's not in the 20s. They need to get healthy. Because I think if they have a solid offseason and they can turn that high draft capital into something useful, they could be right back in the Super Bowl race next year. Like, they have Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
You know?
They have Lamar. I mean, two-time MVP, not by accident, and could have won a third. Like, there's a reason for that. Like, even that's the thing about Lamar is that, yes, incredible athlete, one of the best athletes I've ever seen at any position in football. I don't think I'm outlandish in saying that. And it's always been, he's been such a better thrower in the pocket, throwing over the middle, throwing with kind of his own touch that he puts on, because he puts so much pace on the ball, but it's just, he has a great way of making it catchable. And it's been cool to see that this is the fewest times that he's run on design runs. He's scrambling less. He's a little bit less efficient, but he's still, like, more solid, you know, still good, but not outlandishly good. You know, like, not on top of the charts like we've seen in the past. But it's cool to kind of just see those moments where he is throwing and doing kind of just more ad lib. He's scrambling to throw more. Maybe that's the best way I can put it, as opposed to scrambling to scramble. and I think that's kind of cool that maybe it makes me optimistic about how he will age. Because, you know, that's always a worry. The worst case is a Russell Wilson. We've seen others in the past. That's just a recent case. Rodgers is a case of it more than people realize. His last year in Green Bay onwards, he uses athleticism more than people ever realize. But no, it's just it. Even when this team hasn't been perfect, or just always one step behind, or just as one thing gets shored up, the defense figures out something, Kyle Hamilton gets hurt. Or the offense figures something out. Like, I talk about the guy formation runs, the run game's getting going after being so inefficient for most of the year. And then now Lamar is playing at 70%. And that's just like they were always damned this year, because maybe just of injuries and just maybe because of just an incomplete team. But like you said, look how the AFC playoffs are right now. It's not like I look at all the teams and go, like, wow, there's just 10 juggernauts. It's more like, wow, there's some teams that are all just a one or two things away, including the Ravens.
Yeah. I think the one area, I think if I was a Ravens fan, I think the one area I'd be most frustrated tonight is he ran the ball so well all game until the fourth quarter, you know, like they had their moments where they were able to run the ball well, but then in the fourth quarter, they went from, you know, 23 carries. A lot of third downs, but they had 23 carries for 132 yards in the first three quarters of the game. And in the fourth quarter, they had four carries for 5 yards, I believe, on design runs. So, yeah, that's not really going to cut it. 0% success rate in the fourth quarter when you did have the lead at certain points. That's tough. So they're probably looking at offensive line stuff in the offseason. Shoot, maybe even another running back. I don't know if, like, this late season Derrick Henry run that, like, changes your opinion on that, but they still need to get offensive line help regardless. And honestly, like, shout out to the Steelers for kind of shutting that down and making it a little bit one-dimensional, although Lamar still did do Lamar things as a passer in that fourth quarter. Like, you did put their hands behind the back a little bit. So I guess the big thing for the Steelers, you get DK Metcalf back, which obviously you desperately need that to happen for you to have any success in the playoffs. And that is a game changer. We'll see what happens with them. But man, they just keep snaking by. Another 10-win Tomlin season, baby. 10-win Tomlin.
It really is impossible. It's unbelievable. Not only DK Metcalf, Darnell Washington's the other one. He has a broken arm, so he's officially over. Never mind. That's another one that's like he you can kind of feel him not there. But I don't know. The Steelers offense still has moments. But even like tonight, okay, this was our stat from our friend Keegan Abdu from Next Gen Stats. So Ravens defense, when Kyle Hamilton was on the field, 3.9 yards per play, 36% success rate, -0.27 EPA per play. Pretty, so that's on 38 snaps. Then on 35 plays without Kyle Hamilton, 6.9 yards per play. So that's 3 yards more, 60% success rate. Jeez, so that's a big jump. And then 0.44 EPA per play. And that makes sense. This is a team that started playing a lot more sub packages. And then Alohi Gilman was a great ad by them. But when one of them gets hurt, then just a house of cards that falls. And that's kind of, again, that kind of sums up the Ravens. Steelers, though, play the Texans. I believe they play Monday night, which I believe will be the game I'll be recapping. So, anyway, brief thoughts on that right now? The Steelers. I mean, they need DK, but then they got Derek Stingley. It's kind of the Steelers have struggled against man coverage, and the Texans can thrive in man coverage. So there's my preview. I know we'll talk about it, but just an initial thoughts.
Texans got really good DBs. The Steelers have a good receiver who will be back. So we'll see what happens. I mean, whew, that's tough, man. That's a tough one to go to because. That's what defense is capable of smothering, like even the best quarterbacks. I'll never forget, you know, the Chargers game last year when Herbert was on his Superman all season, and then they walk into the Houston and get absolutely splattered in the wild card round. And really, there was nothing you could do, man. it was that's what a defense with a bunch of first round picks when you hit on all of them. That's kind of what that looks like. So good luck. I'm interested to see like what plan they have for the Texans offense, but man, like DK kind of needs to go like Julio Jones mode to pull that one out against that defense, I think.
Yeah, that's really, and Tomlin magic went on special teams, I guess. That's just kind of what you have to win. That's how they have to win. I mean, Rodgers today pushed the ball a few times where it was actually encouraging, where it was nice to see, but it's just that, they can maybe run on them a little bit. We'll get more into it. I don't want to spoil all of our preview. I have one note I would say because I just thought this was so funny. Like, this was kind of how dire the Steelers' kind of passing attack is as far as their weapons. They ran 989 on third down with Calvin Austin against Nate Wiggins when he was out there. So I talked about this before. 989 is a we have dudes play. And it's just very funny to go, Calvin Austin. Nate Wiggins, yeah, I like my matchup. it didn't work, of course. I don't know. That was just like, yep, that's the Steelers. That's kind of the Steelers this year. I don't know. It's, I don't know. Any closing thoughts?
Nope. I'm excited for the playoffs to start, though. We'll talk more about this one because I don't want to sit here and say, oh wow, they have no chance. Because I got to think about it more.
Might be a thread to pull at, as we like to do. And then we'll talk more Ravens over the upcoming weeks. We'll want to do something where we look forward to some of these teams that are eliminated, kind of what their big picture plans are. I don't know. The Ravens are interesting. They have pick 14 right now. That's kind of in the O line range.
They could use that 14th pick.
Yeah. I know. And I mean, again, we talk about it with the Bucs. It's good. That's the linebacker range too. That's when that starts, kind of linebacker after Avril Reese. So interesting class for them. They need it. They need some juice. There's some teams right now that need it. And that's kind of the right range for this draft. Not a ton of like elite blue chip guys, but a lot of good green chip guys, a lot of good. So yeah, it'll be fun to talk about. Me and you will be talking plenty. I think we have a mock draft this week. So, all right. Steelers play Texans in the wild card. Schedule has been released. You saw it here if you're watching the version on YouTube. But Charles and I got together earlier. We did three highs, three lows. Interesting weekend. Talk about the NFC South, whatever the hell they are. Panthers moving on despite losing. Sure, that's how it works. Seahawks defense looking dominant. AFC South, Jaguars, Texans with some nice performances. You talked about a little Riley Leonard. But Chuck and I went live on YouTube to react to all that week 18. It was a lot of fun. You can listen to that right after the break. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. We are live reacting to week 18, the final regular season week of the 2025 NFL season, even though we're in January 2026, but that's how it works. That's how we title it. And we go on from there. But interesting games on Saturday, which we will dive into, and a stuff happened, I would say, on this Sunday, and we're going to have the Sunday night football game, which we'll talk about later. But I'm Nate Tice, and I'm joined, as always, every Sunday, live reacting to these games. Charles McDonald, Mr. Forverts. Great to see you, bud. How you doing? I like the hat.
Thank you. I'm doing pretty good. Got back from a good friend's wedding this morning. Got to watch some slop. Got to catch up on the games from yesterday. Pretty eventful weekend. I got to say, I'm glad that I kind of got to watch that stuff on rewind this morning because, Wow, that Panthers-Bucks game was – I'm glad I was watching my friends get married. You know, that's that's how I'll describe that. It's like, holy crap, that game hit slog like in the second half. But we're almost done with the playoff bracket. Almost there. Just got to wait for the Ravens-Steelers to do whatever they do next because that game could go –
Right. One little spot to fill out there. We'll talk about the playoff bracket and what it looks like. A little mini preview before our preview show of Wild Card Weekend. But before we get into the ups and downs of Week 18, the three highs, three lows, quick business. The regular season is over, but the NBA season is in full swing. If you haven't already, subscribe to the Yahoo NBA channel on YouTube. So please check that out. Plenty of great pods on there. You got KOC, the Kevin O'Connor Show, the Dunker Spot. Love those guys. And the Big Number. Love those guys too. They scratch all parts of my NBA brain. So make sure to check it out on the Yahoo NBA channel. Subscribe over on youtube.com/YahooNBA. All right. You know, I love all my sports, so I'm glad we got to give them a shout out. They do some great stuff over there. But we're going to get into the ups and downs of week 18. It's time for three highs, three lows. Yes, yes. Even though some playoff seeds were decided and we will talk about those games, I think, Charles, Mr. Verts, you finally felt some completion today in the Browns-Bengals game. You found salvation in the worst possible places. The Browns pull off this game, but most importantly, Myles Garrett sets the NFL sack record with 23 sacks. And I think what's even more notable, I've seen several people tweet this out, but he did the sack record with only 437 total snaps because the Browns weren't exactly playing in a lot of tight games this year with leads, breaking the TJ Watt, Michael Strahan tie. Strahan did it on 567 snaps. Watt did it on 616 snaps. So well below those. Wow. But it was some people are trying to conspiracy theory it. Oh, Burrow gave it up. If you watch it, no, Shelby Harris, I think it's looping around. And Garrett just beats Orlando Brown right away. But you were excited to see this moment. You've been watching a lot of Browns games live to see this moment. So how'd it feel for you to watch Garrett get the record?
It felt like I was like watching like the Falcons do something cool. Like I was really cheering that hard when he got the final sack. And man, I saw people say like this is Joe Burrow like giving up on the play, like at times to make it like the Brett Favre thing. Those are not the same things. And first of all, even the Brett Favre thing, I mean, what he's either gonna slide or he's gonna get killed. I don't know. Like, did he give himself up? Yeah, but would he have given himself up in like any other circumstance? Probably. You know, it is what it is. But to say that this one is Joe Burrow giving himself up, like only in the sense that Miles beat Orlando Brown off the ball so fast that by the time Joe Burrow was like at the end of his drop, it's like I duck or I get strip sacked. Like those are my choices. So Amy, you see him duck, and that's the first time though I've ever seen anyone say that you know this is like a sack that you wouldn't give the defensive line credit for, because the only reason Joe Burrow went down was because of Myles Garrett, and he beat him off the ball so fast. What I love about the last sack was it was just like the perfect play to kind of get a picture of his skill set. I mean, the guy's like he's 6'5", pushing 280. gets off the edge faster than just about any edge rusher in the league. And then when he's like at the point of like the apex, when he's about to turn the corner, I mean, on a 90 degree dime, just turns the corner with 350 pound Orlando Brown on his back. Like most guys, like sometimes like with those heavy ass offensive tackles, when you get to like the point of trying to get past them, they just sit on you and you just, yeah, you know, just get pushed, washed out. But he can then, like Von Miller can, at like 40 pounds heavier, and then he closes for the sack. I mean, just all-time player, all-time season. I didn't realize he had played that few snaps, which is, oh my goodness, that's really just an incredible marker for that.
Oh, man, next-gen stats with a great stat here. I was actually looking up literally the same thing because his average get-off was 0.6 seconds today. Anything below 0.8 is elite. And he was 0.6. I that's one of the fastest I've ever seen, like when I just review a game. But next gen stats here, you can see on our live show, but he crossed the line on that sack, crossed the line of scrimmage on 0.23 seconds, the fastest get off time of any sack in the NFL this season. It felt that way because he was already turning the corner before Brown was like, oh God. So, like you said, trying to run him by. It's a tremendous thing. He played, this is the most impressed. Obviously, he has the sack record, but how hard he's been playing against the run too on a team that was going nowhere, playing rookie quarterbacks the entire year, or old Joe Flacco. Like, I mean, that's tremendous. I thought him and then Carson Schwechinger, who didn't play this year or played today, I don't think, but he was defensive rookie of the year to me. That's a really cool season to have for this Browns team that just didn't have a lot. They won this game with 200 yards on offense, 82 passing yards on offense, 30% success rate, 3.8 yards per play. The Bengals had 24 first downs. The Browns had 11 and they won the game. 72% of the Browns yards today were off yak. 0.67 points per drive, 21% sack rate for the Browns today, 6 sacks and 4 QB hits. This is their offense, I mean, and they won this game. And I do think it just is, you talked about how he turns the corner. Von Miller is the guy in my brain that is the most Gumby, you know, at least in my kind of like adult brain. Obviously, I saw guys when I was younger and stuff, but he's doing it at what, 245? And Garrett does it at 285 and maybe more. And what they call it is run the hoop. It's insane what he can do is running the hoop and bending around that hoop. We can't use words enough. Like there's no words to describe what you see. And it's kind of cool that there's actually a record to like stamp what this guy has done throughout his career and what he's built himself into being as a player.
And also this is just one of those moments that it kind of like connects you back to just like the humanity aspect of the game. Cause obviously like this season's lost. They stink. You know, they've got a lot of changes coming this offseason. But when he got that sack, the way everyone absolutely lost their mind on the field and they carried him off the field and, you know, he's on everyone's shoulders on the sidelines. And then even this lost game between two teams that aren't doing anything, to see how excited all of them were when Shador got down the field, they got the field goal off. I was like, that was kind of cool. It's like, man, you know, even when you have these seasons where ultimately at the end point, he didn't get where he wanted to, you can still find things to really care about. And those are kind of like my favorite moments. Like last year when the Bucks got Mike Evans, like that 1,000-yard catch and everyone just lost their mind. It's like totally
they should have run the clock and they're throwing the ball.
That's the best. It's good to
make any football sense at all.
Exactly. That's what I just love. So shout out to Myles Garrett. That's an incredible record to get.
I agree with that. It's kind of cool to see. That's the thing is obviously the goal is to win a Super Bowl, but everyone's got kind of like different successful seasons. Like I saw today, and some of the incentive stuff is fun to like track and see what happens. Like Dawson Knox caught a touchdown and you can see Mitch Trubisky just totally, he had two wide open tight ends and he just goes, waves off. I think it was Dalton Kincaid. He's like, no, never mind. Never mind. He better get a steak dinner out of that or something out of that. Right. But Chase Young got his 10th sack and you can see he's on the sideline going like, and guys are like, hi, you know, 10, I got 10. Like he was Billy Bob in Varsity Blues. And guys are just like so happy for him. And he's all fired up. That's it. That the Saints are, it's more or less a lost season. It's more about little victories for that team. But it's kind of cool. I agree. I love seeing the personal stuff, the personal aspect stuff. My last kind of thing on it was the Favre play too, again with Strahan, was a run play where he kept the ball. And that was a gentleman's agreement, give him the sack. And then it was a one man bootleg, basically a lonesome. And this one was a true pass play. And Burrow today, He had 17 pass attempts under 2.5 seconds. His time to throw was like 2.6 seconds. And it was like one of the fastest he had entire season. He did not want to get caught. Just like, not as bad as Rodgers last week, but to an extent, he was like, no, 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 I'm not going to get. And then I think he finally was just like, ah, you got me. Yeah, you got me.
Yeah. I think Miles was listening to the show last week because his alignments were way better this week. He wasn't out in the 20 technique, you know. He was like rushing from tackle, rushing from nose, like getting closer, and then he got down. I'm like, there we go.
Yeah,
there we go.
He finally got it. I know his feet were on the numbers when he was rushing the passer. Yeah, but all right, it was cool to see some history, especially for just a odd year from the Browns. And rumors are that Stefanski might be out, and Andrew Berry might stay, and Stefanski might be the hottest coach on the market given what's out there right now. Got some other thoughts on some other teams that I saw some rumors today, but let's get to high number two. Teams that will not be changing head coaches. These are the Seahawks and the 49ers, and the Seahawks, I mean, really dominating at least their defense to win this game and beat the 49ers and take the number one seed. It was 13-3. That's with 2 missed field goals, a lot of drives. I mean, it was a beatdown by this defense. It, like, really just the Seahawks offense just had to be there. Just do enough. And that's really why you feel pretty good about them, but they clinch the number one seed. This defense is locked. I mean, they're number one to me. It's them, the Eagles and the Texans. I mean, these are the three elite defenses to me, at least in my, just in my mind. But man, there was a couple things what did they do to Shanahan's office? This is the lowest that Kyle Shanahan coach offense has had in success rate, since Washington performance in 2013. So 2 name changes ago. For the Washington franchise. That's how long this has been since the Shanahan offense had this low of success rate. Fewest rushing yards, tied for third worst ever success rate, bottom 10 explosive play rate, tied for fewest explosives in a game for a Shanahan offense. This is over 300 games, including the playoffs. This was an absolute beatdown. But what'd you think about the Seahawks performance and them as now the number one seed?
Oh, that's a Jimmy's and Joe's game, I thought. Kyle's had a great year. And I don't doubt that, like, his game plan was probably solid for this team. But, you know, those X and O's become Jimmy's and Joe's, and Seattle's were just a whole lot better, especially on defense. Like, man, the performance against the run, like, there was just nothing, like, because I guess this game kind of went how we were afraid it would go for the 49ers. It's like, okay, like, you've had a nice season. You've had a nice run, like, just kind of crushing all these, you know, softer defenses over the last 6 weeks or so. But you ran into, like, probably the best defense in the league, and you got 9 first downs, 173 yards. Woof. I mean, that's just not really stuff you see from a Kyle Shanahan offense. Their rushing success rate was 10% on the day. Negative EPA, obviously. And like you said, because I think there's room to be maybe a little concerned about the Seahawks offense, just given like how bad the 49ers defense has been. But it didn't matter this week. Just when you look at some of their, the 49ers offense, what they did this week, 50% of their drives didn't even get a first down. That's not really what you're used to. And even this, like, this diminished version of them. So that was just hey, our players are a lot better than yours, and we're going to punch you in the mouth for 4 quarters, and you're not going to be able to do anything about it. I mean, they 10 rushes for 32 yards and none scramble runs this week for the 49ers. Nuts.
It was kind of weird to see the stats. Like, usually when a team does really good against the run, they have like 6 run stuffs, you know, gains of 0 yards or TFL. The Seahawks didn't have a single stuff. They didn't have a single TFL, a single stop for 0 yards, and they allowed only 1 successful run. And it was a Brian Robinson run. It wasn't even a CMC run the entire game. Like, that's just a beatdown. And I looked it up. Next Gen Stats has it. They only missed 3 tackles the entire game, the Seahawks. They allowed 12 yards after those missed tackles. The 49ers missed 21 tackles. 21 tackles missed, and the Seahawks missed 3. And that's kind of what that was. I mean, watch all the third downs back, third and fourth downs. It was Purdy everywhere. Purdy looked the first, like, his first kind of read. He was like, he came off of it, and like the pressure wasn't winning right away for the Seahawks, but they don't win that way. They win by collapsing the pocket, making some edginess, and then making the quarterback move to 2 and 3. And then the pressure gets home, or, you know, or gets tight and they can't really maneuver. And that's how all those third and fourth downs felt. Like, it was, the coverage was so good. And that's what, there's no, like, you know, there's usually like a popular system that everyone's trying to copy. And that's why I always laugh about with Mike McDonald. It's not a system. He runs everything. Again, I always use the term, it's kaleidoscopic. And I looked it up and it was perfect. There's a their stat. They had four or more dropbacks where they played they played five different coverage types on four or more dropbacks. They played man, cover four, cover two, cover three, cover six, all the base coverages. But most teams, it's like predominantly two or three, not five different ones. Like having five different pitches as a pitcher, and they can do all of them well. And also they just take your strengths and make them your not strengths. Brock Purdy on play action, 8 for 9 for 38 yards, 1.1 air yards per attempt on play action passes. Like that's the Shanahan thing that makes it go. And you're throwing 1.1 air yards per attempt. Like it was I don't know what the word I'm looking for, fascinating, but it's just like it was just a truly one of those performances that's like, oh my God, you guys are this level of a defense. And that's why I have considered them as a true contender, because offensively, and I know Trent Williams was gone or wasn't playing and all that, but that wasn't the thing. It wasn't like the left tackle was losing the 49ers the game. It was just like it felt so tight throughout the entire game. And then, of course, they drove the one time and the Seahawks get the turnover. And then, you know, offensively, I do think the Seahawks run game is getting there. And then the passing game is explosive. It's just like if you survive the three dumb Sam Darnold moments, this is a really hard team to beat. Like if they survive those without, like, Sam had the one where he tripped and then he was trying to hand the ball off and the fumble and they recovered it.
Yeah.
Like you're going to get three of those out of Sam. So if you survive those three dumb moments, they're really hard to beat, especially if the run game's getting a little bit better like this, at least league average run game. That game was just like tight the whole game. It just felt like the Seahawks had it. Like if they just controlled themselves on offense a little bit more, and Myers made a couple kicks.
Yeah. I don't want to say like they're a bad offense. It's just, you know, they had moments. They had moments. Just when they've reached such high peaks this season. And I'm like, over the back half of the season, like, where quite is that? Like that second half against Atlanta, they torched them. But it's been, you know, a lot of up and down, you know, since then. I thought one thing that was interesting, I was running back to the game. It looked like the Seahawks, like, maybe they were having a little bit more success running from like their three receiver set. So went through and just clicked on like their 11 personnel runs. The average 0.25 EPA per rush on those, you know, 36% success rate, but 11 carries for 73 yards. Maybe that's not nothing. I don't know if that's more like, is this where they can kind of just rip off more explosive runs? Or if this is like a 49ers right. weakness where it's like, oh, we're just so small in the back end that, you know, even with receivers, you can kind of run on us. But the run game, I think, is something that can continue to improve into the playoffs, because like they have a nice 1-2 punch. I think with Walker and Charbonnet, it just sometimes it just feels like it's more about like just getting those guys like kind of into the perfect situation for them. And sometimes with Kenneth Walker, it's like keeping him in a perfect situation for him.
Keeping the blinders on.
Yeah, come on. Just run resource. Right there, man. Don't take the cheese. Don't let the zoomies get you. But yeah, they got so many good players. I just don't really see how they couldn't at least make it to like the NFC title game with how good the defense is. I mean, that was just an ass kicking. And then you kind of pair that with the Carolina game. It was really good. That is Super Bowl caliber defensive play for sure.
It is. I know they're complete. The offense is good enough. That's the thing. It's not the best. It's not elite. It's good enough to make a run. And Darnold, they create enough explosive plays as an offense. And it's not the big worry with, oh yeah, the Kubiak-Shanahan game script, which is always the thing. Like if you get them out of the game script, make them drop back. They have a defense and a special teams that keeps them in a lot of close and tight games. So that's the thing, is it's not as worrisome, I think, for me as maybe some other builds of a Shanahan Kubiak offense that's not maybe elite. But the shotgun runs is interesting. Maybe they have some tendency out of it. Maybe shotgun is a heavy pass, and so they can kind of like catch you. And that's how the playoffs are. Now they got a bye week. They can do some self-scouting. That's another thing. I trust this coaching staff to make some cool adjustments with a bye week. So I'm very curious to see who they go against in the playoffs. My little tidbit, maybe some shotgun runs in there too. Only four run plays in the NFL this year have converted on 3rd and 15 plus, and the Seahawks have all four of them converted for a first down. There's two scrambles, a Josh Allen scramble, a Justin Herbert scramble, but four design runs have converted on 3rd and 15 plus, and the Seahawks have all four. And that's Kenneth Walker too, like to a T. The 49ers can't really sustain pressure. You know, they don't blitz. They don't bring heat at all. That's not the Salah philosophy. And that got me like kind of, and that's going to keep Sam Darnold from spiraling too badly and this offense and everything. So I was looking at all the NFC playoff teams. So since week 9, Bears, 23rd in sack rate, 24th in knockdown rate, 27th in pressure rate. Eagles, 5th in sack rate, 18th in knockdown rate, 5th in pressure rate, 23rd in run stuff rate, so run plays. Panthers, 18th in sack rate, 28th knockdown, 23rd pressure. 49ers, dead last sack rate, 30th pressure rate. Rams, 25th sack rate, 10th pressure rate. So kind of like a little bit all over the place. Packers, 27th sack rate, 7th pressure rate. To me, the Rams and the Eagles are kind of the teams that you'd be worried about if you're maybe the Seahawks. But I give the Seahawks offense the nod over the Eagles, or Seahawks defense the nod over the Eagles offense. Rams, I consider kind of a wash. The Rams offense is really good. But that's the thing. It's just matchup-wise, I feel pretty good about where the Seahawks are at. And they get a bye week, so they're not going to face the number 2 seed. That's the Bears, sadly. But they're going to be playing, you know, whoever they got. Who they got in the 7 seed. We'll be talking more about this. Oh, they got the Packers. But they'll be playing the Bears or the Packers. Not playing one of those two. You get what I mean. I'm gonna tie myself into knots with this point I'm trying to make. I'm trying to say that there's only two matchups I'm really worried about for this offense, and both of those matchups, the Rams are 32nd in stuff rate on defense, so as far as getting TFLs and everything, they're pretty good against the run, but it's not like the most dangerous defenses they have to go against. I feel as good about them as they do these other teams in the NFC. So yeah, Seahawks. Oh, they also signed Charles Cross, left tackle, to a nice extension. Four years, over $100 million. I like Charles Cross. I've liked him since Mississippi State. He was my OT1 in that class. I think he's good. You know, he's like the Jake Matthews tier of left tackle.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
You forget he's there.
Kind of good. Yeah, exactly. Good, maybe always going to be your O-lineman two, if that makes sense. Like, as far as you look at the whole five, so that's why you got Gray Zabel. But that left side, they got some things going on. They need another guard, a right guard, but they're doing okay. That run game's getting there. All right, let's get to high number 3. The AFC South. Talk about wide open conferences. The AFC is wide open, but the AFC South, they're in the playoffs looking pretty good. The Jags went 41-7 over the Titans. Cam Moore got hurt. That kind of stunk. And then the Texans beat Riley Leonard and the Colts in a very entertaining game. I really enjoyed watching that game for a lot of reasons. But let's start with the Jags-Titans game. The Jags have won 8 in a row. Texans won 9 in a row. Both of these teams have not won or have not lost since Halloween, more or less. but man, let's just start with this game. How are you feeling about the Jags? How they're looking for the playoffs and now really clinching home field advantage in the first round of the playoffs at the very least.
I thought it was great because the only question that I really had during this run was like, okay, you've been beating up on these bad teams. You know, what happens when you play the good team? Then they went to Denver and scored 34 points on that defense. I mean, that answers a lot of questions for me. At least it's like, are they ready to go on a run? Yeah, why not? I mean, when you look at the rest of the AFC, Bills as a first draw in the playoffs is, it's a little tough. that's gonna be a fun game, but you know, Josh Allen with something to prove is going to be a tough one, but based on what they've done, I don't see why they wouldn't feel like they could at least put up a game for Buffalo's defense. I mean, especially given where Buffalo's defense has been. It's not like they've, you know, been world beaters this year and they've had their moments where they struggled. So, like, they're just as legitimate a Super Bowl contender as anyone, especially when you look at these teams, man. Like, Denver, New England, Jacksonville, Pittsburgh as, like, your home – Pittsburgh or Baltimore as your home teams – I don't know. They probably feel like they match up well to that. And you've already played Houston this year, and we'll see how the Buffalo game goes. I mean, it sounds crazy to say. I know, just given like their history, but you really have to treat each year as its own thing. And Jacksonville, I mean, this is what good teams do, right? When Cam Moore gets hurt, you put the screws in your divisional opponent, and you get ready for the playoffs. So I'm excited for them. I'm really excited for them. You know, I'm trying not to get too ahead of myself. I don't know if that's just like old Jaguars burnt stuff, but that was fun. And also, I had no idea Brandon Allen was a Titan until today. I had no clue. I was like, who the hell is number 10? Oh, of course, Brandon Allen. After that, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot Brian Callahan. He was here. That happened this season. Yeah.
There's some generational trauma with the Jaguars. There's some like, it's going to have something bad's got. Trevor's going to get, I mean, they're. Liam Cohen and Trevor were hunting for some stats at the end of the game to get over 4,000 yards for Trevor. And I was like, hey, you guys are playing with the football gods, man. do you know what team you guys represent? So like, yeah, just, I don't want to be doing this. I think your stadium was buried. It was built on something bad. so I know, but that's how I feel. It's just that the AFC, all these teams are so imperfect, and they've shown they're so aggressive on offense. So like this, is how they have an aggressive passing game. The run game is pretty bad right now. I will say it's boom bust, but we saw some Bashel Tootin out there. And they're on defense. They're a good defense, and they have they're really good at game planning. Campanelli's good at game planning. And they're a really effective blitzing team. That was something that I actually kind of looked up after stats. I could list that off, but they're constantly attacking. They're like a 3-point shooting basketball team that plays full court defense. Like, that's how I feel about them. They're boom bust. We're chucking it. We are constantly at your throats on offense, defense. Might backfire sometimes, but woo, let's let it ride. Like, let's throw some more in breakers at Jacoby Myers and Parker Washington. Let's go for big screens. Like, let's do this. But this was a little stat I looked up. All right, at least since week 10, the Jags offense, 31st in running back rushing success rate, but 9th in overall success rate, 8th in offensive DVOA, top 10 in EPA per play. And their defense is 2nd in EPA per play since week 10. They've played some backups, I will say that. But in DVOA, they're 5th in DVOA in the back half of the season, 5th in success rate, 17th in rushing, but still 8th in rushing EPA. They're ace in the hole, though. They can blitz. They're their best blitzing team, and at least in the back half of the season. 1st in EPA per pass when they blitz. Negative 0.33 EPA per pass allowed when they blitz. That is like the worst quarterback you've ever seen. 2nd in success rate, 37% allowed. 1st in interception rate, 4th in net yards per attempt. They're only 27 in sack rate. They get a good amount of pressures, but they're confusing quarterbacks because they'll run cover 0, they'll run cover 2, they'll run single high. So they kind of just don't run the same thing every time. It's game planning. That's awesome to have for the playoffs. Going against Josh Allen, who in his career has diced up blitzes, but this year he's about middle of the pack against the blitz, but it's also a little scary. So say we're blitzing Josh Allen and he can run right by us, or he can chuck something deep or do anything like that. And on offense, we've talked about this plenty. Jacoby Myers, the addition of that, but the proof is in the pudding. Like Trevor Lawrence finishes here about middle of the pack in the underlying metrics as far as like success rate, EPA dropback. But since week 10, since they had Jacoby Myers, he's playing like a top 5 quarterback. 4th in net yards per attempt, 4th in success rate, 5th in EPA per dropback, 1st in completion of 10 or more yards, 2nd in rushing first downs. That's always an aspect about Trevor. He's a great runner. 3rd in attempts to have traveled 10 or more air yards, 40% of his passes, 2nd in explosive pass rate. This is a chuck it offense, and it's awesome to watch. They got a good group of receivers and a good tight end in Brent Strange. And I'm excited to see kind of like this battle, because the Bills defense is weak against the run. They run some cool. Sean McDermott's really good on, you know, the game plan stuff. So I'm stoked for this matchup, because Trevor Lawrence playing like this and Josh Allen, those are 2 top 5 quarterbacks right now playing and playing like at the height of their powers, I think is the best way to put it. So very, very excited for this potential matchup, this actual matchup, I should say.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Other game, Texans-Colts. Thoughts on this one? The Texans benched their guys as the game went along, but it was entertaining. Yeah. It was entertaining at the very least. But what did you think about this one?
I mean, you said the Texans, they did bench their guys as the game went along. Like Davis Mills, I think he had like 9 or 10 dropbacks in this game. So obviously not them like going their hardest. But when I was watching this game, like remember when Phillip Rivers got the first start, and people were like complaining, oh, you know, this is a quarterback like development problem. It missed the window, because it's not the fact that. Oh, you haven't developed any quarterbacks ready to play. One, like everyone got hurt, so that was kind of different. But like, if there was a quarterback development aspect to get mad at, is that you did just draft someone in the 6th round who appears to have some ability that does actually need to play now that next year is, you know, the mystery box. And I think, you know, for me at the time, it was like the Colts, you know, you got to be more honest with yourself about what just happened here where Daniel Jones gets hurt. Like, realistically, your season's over. And just because you're 8-5 or 8-6, I mean, come on, man. Like, you're signing a 40-year-old quarterback off the bench. Maybe the quarterback development problem is that they did that instead of just letting Riley Leonard play. Because today, Riley Leonard showed that he's actually can make some plays and is certainly more physically talented than Rivers is right now. And maybe that can make up some of the you know, I guess inexperience that he has. Because at this point in the season, like, you were just supposed to be trying stuff to see if it works, not believing that you earnestly had a shot to, like, win the Super Bowl and make the playoffs and all that stuff, even if you were mathematically still alive. So I thought Riley played a fun game today. Like, I thought he played a good game today. Probably one of the better games that we've seen of any rookie quarterback this year. Honestly, if we're going to keep it real. Like, he's certainly the best. Like, yeah, I mean, he might be the best, like, the best or one of the best games, like a non-Shuck, non-Ward quarterback this year as far as rookies go. So that was cool to see. And I was just like, damn, you guys kind of wasted, like, this back half of the season. But I do think he probably showed just enough today where fans would not puke at the idea of him competing for the starting job next year with someone else, you know, which is ultimately pretty good for a 6th round pick.
That's it. It's when I, man, all right, Texans, you're in the playoffs and everything right now. I'm going to talk Colts. Texans, your defense is awesome. I'll just get you out of the way. 4th in defensive DVOA since week 10, and your offense is 20th in DVOA, but you're getting there. It's getting there. The run game's not been great, but the passing game's 9th in DVOA. They're getting there. All right, but I do want to talk about the Colts. They're retaining Chris Bauer and Shane Steichen. Already came out. Lost the game, retaining him. Came out right away. Daniel Jones, this is a reversion back to the I told you so before the season. He played well enough. Then he gets hurt, pops an Achilles. He had a one-year deal. He's a free agent now. You completely lost favor with Anthony Richardson. You can tell just everything, even before the eye socket injury, but now post-eye socket injury. The Riley Leonard's a 6th round pick. You have no first rounder. Anyways, they had playoff possibilities after all these injuries happened. Riley had to play against the Jags, actually. They were playing all these backup quarterbacks. And then it comes out, we're going to bring Philip Rivers to play against the Seahawks. Okay, I get it. Get you through the week. You don't want Riley Leonard to go against what we think is the best defense in the NFL on the road. He's banged up, I think, originally, too. I think he had a knee thing. But then he was a full practice after that. To me, and I get it, I'm not sitting in these hot seats, but they kept their jobs. So that also is a lack of organizational communication. If they were saying, hey, we're going to let you know after week 18, as opposed to, like, having a plan about this, your starting quarterback that was on a one-year deal as an Achilles, give the young guy some reps, because you got to, because what else are you guys going with? You have no first round pick. Are you going with another free agent? You bring back Jones within the palm Achilles, which we've seen has really hindered quarterbacks, especially one like Jones that requires athleticism. It just never made sense to me after the first week of Rivers. Then the next couple of weeks, they played some, like, not great defenses. Isn't that a pretty good time to roll out Leonard and give him a shot, see what he's got? And maybe you found something here. Kyle Shanahan, no qualms dropping on Brock Purdy the last month of the season. He wasn't calling up Brian Greasy. He was just quarterback coach, but that's maybe not the best comparison. Matt Schaub off the road, you know, off the street to have him put Matt Ryan, you know, something of that sort. So it's just the frustrating things with everything with this organization. I think for the last 5 years, 6 years, 7 years post Luck, is that their quarterback plan is just what gets us through this next week, as opposed to taking the lumps and the bad things that can happen when you're playing inexperienced quarterbacks and dealing with it and having the faith that you guys can build something, or at least give it a shot to see what you got. I would much rather have a 3 full game sample size of Riley Leonard than one game against half the game with the Texans backups. And so now you're going, like, all right, was that enough? Or do we have to do this? Do we have to bring Jones back? Does Jones want to go, no, screw this, I'm out? Like, I don't know. You just left yourself with a lot of question marks. I think you just give yourself some more sample size to go off of, especially if you kept your freaking jobs. So then you're playing. There was a thing. They're like, oh, we got to keep fighting for the playoffs. They had a 2%, I think, playoff odds. And they're starting Philip Rivers out there a couple of weeks ago. And I'm like, come on, just got to know. I get it. You want to fight and everything. But you also just got to kind of, like, if you're building to something, this doesn't seem like you're trying to build anything. You're just trying to save your jobs week in, week out, and hoping to get to 10-7, as opposed to, like, man, maybe we really got something we could build around this guy, and then we could actually find something. Now we got 6th round rookie quarterback, and this could be great. But yeah, I it's a very frustrating organization, and now they just have still a ton of question marks and no 1st round pick. Like, cool. It's going to be a very interesting offseason for them, even though they have a lot, now they've sent Alec Pierce, all that stuff. Like, it's just, Alec Pierce got ejected, by the way. Did you see that?
I did see that.
Bumped the ref. Bumped. Yeah. Quotations. Bumped the ref. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was like the OJ Mayo in high school flop from the ref. That was something.
Hopefully, I mean, it comes out of your future earnings, man. These guys are something else sometimes. I can't believe it.
The ref.
Yeah.
I mean, I know. That was absurd to me. absolutely absurd. But my Leonard thoughts, I was a fan of him before, but I actually thought, yeah, he had the strip sack. He had an interception when his arm got hit. He avoids sacks. You can see his athleticism just watching boot to the left or his scramble touchdown or rush touchdown. He's willing to push the ball. You saw first pass, saw it throughout the game. Even on non-designers, he's willing to throw over the middle. I don't know. Size and traits, and it seems like a hard work ethic, and he's tough as all get out. I'd bet on that, especially when you're that or 31-year-old Daniel Jones coming off an Achilles. I don't think he's 31, but a little bit older Daniel Jones coming off an Achilles. but yeah, Texans, 28. Though, 28. Yeah, I was like 31. That actually feels mean. But 28 coming off an Achilles. I don't know. It's not like I wouldn't want to be in those shoes, even if they're coming back for another year. But we'll see what happens with them. Texans play the winners of the winner of the Ravens Steelers matchup from Sunday Night Football tonight. So can't wait to preview that game. Spoilers. I think I'm going to lean towards the Texans on whoever they play in the wild card matchup when we preview that game. All right, let's get to the lows. Let's get to your home turf. Let's get to the muck that you love getting in this division known as the NFC South. South is perfect to describe this division because it's towards your butt. Decided in the dumbest way possible. The Panthers lose. And then they still make the playoffs at 8-9. They back their way in to the playoffs because the Falcons beat the Saints. Falcons started benching their players too. Still beat the Saints, who are trying their hardest to win that game. Don't get me wrong. I watched it. They were trying. They can't say, oh, no, we want. They were trying to win that game. So we'll start with the Bucs beating the Panthers. What'd you think about that one? And the pouring rain.
Ooh, man.
Very ugly game.
It was appropriate.
Yeah.
That's how that division just the year should have ended, with a three-way tie at 8-9. One of the teams that tied for 8-9 has been eliminated for like 4 or 5 weeks, the Falcons. And even though they were technically in the, you know, with the same record as the Panthers and the Bucks, they had no shot of winning this because they lost two games to the Panthers this year. Blown out by two games to the Panthers this year. And man... Have you looked at the Panthers stats like since that second Falcons game? Like their offensive stats, they're like a bottom six offense basically. But they had another one of these games that they've had like this season where it's a high EPA per play, really low success rate split.
Yep.
And
hard way to live. Like,
you know, it's funny though, because I was about to ask how much longer can you live on this? It's like, wait, but they didn't because they lost this game. They lost this game. I forgot.
They made the playoffs.
But they did lose that game yesterday.
Yes.
And they like it just gets to these moments where I was surprised when after I watched that game, I looked at some of the EPA stats that like they had positive EPA numbers, passing numbers for the game. I was like, really? Like it just looked so difficult at times. But you know they sometimes it just get barely enough where they can like create some explosive plays, or you know the defense can create an explosive play of their own or a turnover. This week they didn't have like too much from it, and I looked at that game. I was like, man, I don't know how they're supposed to play, whether it's like the 49ers, the Seahawks, the Rams, like at the time, and now we know it's going to be a rematch between the Rams. And look, don't come here talking about, oh, they beat the Rams like, you know, a month ago, 6 weeks ago. Don't care. That game was so fake, man. Like, they had, I think their shortest touchdown of the day was 35 yards. And the Rams, they still moved the ball at will. They just kind of shot themselves in the foot a little too often. So
I guess like this is one of those success rate on the day. Not just passing, right. Just like, period. 70%
like,
period.
I needed something from Carolina to suggest that maybe they won't get absolutely destroyed next week by the Rams. And no, I feel even worse about them. I don't know what they do. They're in purgatory, but you make the playoffs, I guess. So that's something to matter, I guess. But the way you got there, it probably doesn't feel all that fulfilling. You lost.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. It's just so empty. It's just the ending of Game of Thrones. Just like, oh, okay, that's it. All right. The Panthers ran 49 plays in this game total. The Bucs had 38 design runs in this. And the Panthers, by the way, yes, are going to the playoffs and won this division. And that's, they only had one, they only had two successful runs the entire day, which should be the strength of their offense. One of those was because of a penalty. The other one was 3 yards they got on fourth and one. So they had zero successful runs on first and second down or third down the entire game. They had the failed flea flicker in the red zone, which was looked like a hitch and go by T-Mac. And they tried to do the hitch and go, and Rico Dowdle slipped. Like, he slipped like five times in this game, by the way. More than like any – I know it was rain, pouring rain. Change the cleats, dude. Like, obviously you're not wearing the right cleats. Get those long cleats in there. Or they call it the 5/8. But man, it was like, it was just sloppy, hard. The fourth quarter, they did have some drives, don't get me wrong, and they were moving the ball, but it's all big plays to Coker and McMillan, like, as opposed to like a lot of sustained, like, oh, flowing success to the offense. Bootlegs get harder throughout the game. It's hard to like just go like, yeah, I feel real good and I'm excited against this Rams matchup. The last time they played, I felt like the Rams controlled that game, even though the Panthers won. It was like, whoa, that's crazy. I think also weather like this, and that's the thing, is like, you go, oh, it's not always going to be like that. Yeah, but the playoffs, the weather gets like crap, like nationwide. Did you see the weather throughout the country this past week? Like, it's rain, it's snow, it's wind. Sometimes you get lucky and it's not too bad in January. Sometimes it's crazy weather. But this is why, again, I'm always going to talk about traits with quarterbacks. And with Bryce Young, the interception of the McMillan on the out route, he throws that with perfect timing and perfect footwork. He doesn't hitch. He throws it right as T-Mac is breaking on the route. Exactly what you want to do. But because his arm is below average, it technically ends up being late. And it's late inside. And in the NFL, you're dead against any competent corner. And Parrish is a competent corner. He's a pretty good player. And so it's like one of those things where it's like, man, everything is so hard. And not that the run game is one of the worst run games now. They've been back to like bottom five since the second half of the season. It's, yeah, it feels this way. It feels really hard. It feels like they have to live in the margins, and now they're getting into the playoffs where against probably one of the best teams. I mean, if top three at worst, the Rams. So it's just like, man, this is just a hard gale. So they win at 8-9, and they feel like they should win at 8-9. They're not like an exciting offense. The defense allowed, what, 60% passing success rate to Baker, who's running around and doing stuff, like, and throw flipping hook shot and throws. Like, at least, like, the Panthers had six explosive passes. That's fine, but they're living, again, they're living and dying by that. Now you're going against a second matchup against a competent defense coordinator. Just hard to live that way, especially when you're getting into these tough opponents.
Not good. Not good.
Not good.
I don't know.
And the Bucs. And
honestly, like, when I look at this division, is it going to be that much different next year? Unless, like, Tyler Shuck just, like, takes the next step, the Saints kind of take over, but... I don't know. The Falcons on first round pick. Their quarterback has three torn ACLs. The Panthers are not that good. And now they're going to be out of range for like a serious upgrade in the draft unless they really nail that pick. So I don't know, man. It's going to be 3 years.
And the Bucs need some deal. Yeah. And actually, I was going to bring up the Bucs. The Bucs next year. So free agents. Mike Evans turns 33. And if you look at stats, Baker Mayfield's like a top eight quarterback with Mike Evans on the field and like a bottom six quarterback with him off the field. Hassan Reddick, who is more of a role player. And he's past 30 now. Jamal Dean, Levante David, who is way past his prime, but that's more just the point that they linebacker has been a weakness for them. And now they for sure need a linebacker. Thankfully, it's a great linebacker class. Sonny Styles is probably going to be mocked to the Bucs for the next 6 months from Ohio State. But Logan Hall, Rashad White, Cade Otton, Co-Keeft, all these guys are kind of role players, but it's just more to point that they have to make decisions on these role players. They have all their draft picks, but it's kind of just stay like nothing more, nothing less. They just have their picks and they're middle of the pack cap space. They're kind of just like in the middle of all the stuff, but they just have interesting decisions. And they have to just kind of the offensive, just like they have to figure out the offense too. Like the run game fell off a cliff this year with and without healthy offensive linemen. And the passing game was just, of course the receivers were banged up throughout the year, but man, like Baker was just so all over the place too in the last three quarters of the season. So I know they have to kick it again. Like next year, they're bringing Bowles back. It seems like it feels like next year is the one more push. Baker has, I think, one more deal on his contract. And then after that, it's like, who knows? Like they might be a new head coach, new quarterback and everything, but they're in a weird spot. They're in a weird spot because they have a lot of talent on this team, but the in the margins and then the important spots, I'm not feeling as great about offensive play caller, quarterback, and really Bowles a little bit, the head coach.
Yeah, it's a tough spot, but I think it's about time to hit the reset button. You probably hit your head. You hit your head on the ceiling last year, probably, and then it's about time to start over.
Yeah, that was like the best feeling of what this could be. Yeah, no, I think that's good. They need pass rush help, man. They need guys that can just win.
So bad.
If they don't blitz, they don't really get some heat. So, how about any thoughts on Saints Falcons? We had a Kirk Cousins interception to a defensive lineman to start the game. Xavier Watts gets beat and then forces the fumble, which is cool. Drake London had some beast moments. Good to have him back out there, man.
Look, pay Kyle Pitts. I've been saying it for like 2 years. They have got to get this done. They've got to pay him because I don't want to doom too much about this team, the Falcons, because absolutely, we should feel good about this. Whenever you vanquish evil and, you know, the mighty sword of justice where Martin Luther King is from gets to win and cut down the Saints, that's something worth celebrating. But I'm just like, man, like this team could be worse in a few months because they got cuts to make and there's no first round pick. I mean, like they can get underneath, like they can get, you know, cap space, generate cap space. But man, this new era of free agency, like who are you even spending that on? That's really like making a big difference because the guys who are good, you got to make trades for those guys now. They don't really hit the market. But, you know, like you got to get Kyle Pitts back. It was great to see Drake London back. And now, you know, you're just hoping that the Saints don't take the next step, like always. Like, you're always hoping that. And then you hope that Michael Penix is just healthy enough to, I guess, make it through the season next year. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe they keep Terry and Raheem. I would imagine that they do just because this is what Arthur Blank does. Like, he lets these late season games, when they've already been eliminated, he lets them sway him. But I just don't think people can forget. This was the result of your all-in year. Like, yeah, you can feel good about James Pierce having 10 sacks as a rookie. You can feel good that Jalen Walker looks like a stud. And that, like, the young core of this talent, like, they do have some players that are worth being excited about. But you can't add to it the way that you would like to. And that's where you get worried about getting stuck in the mud. So, yeah, like, I had fun today. I had fun watching them. I think they've got a nice collection of good players. But this is year 5. And you just got... Mm-hmm. Another 8-win season where you were limited from the playoffs a month ago after putting an extra first-round pick and more cap space into the season. No, you shouldn't be able to come back, but I think...
In a wide-open division, too.
Wide-open division.
It's not like they're playing in the NFC West or even the NFC North where you're like, well, you know, they're in a gauntlet. Like, 8-9 is a pretty good year. It's like, dude, like, 9-8 wins this year. Like, I'm glad I'm not a fan of them. I know people there, but
it's awful.
Because it's just even stuff that's like a strength right now. Like the line, we're going to have question marks soon. Like, you know, that's the strength of the team. They need a secondary pass catcher. Tyler Allgeier is a free agent. Kyle Pitts is a free agent. Defensively, they need to build a spine. I will say, and we have talked about this multiple times, Jeff Ulbrich has been great. I would say he's gotten the most with these blitz packs. He has been great. So, but if they were a team that made the playoffs this year, I would talk about them like I kind of talk about the Panthers as far as defensively. It's like, yeah, they're great and they have great game plans and great designs and everything, but I can also just pound the rock on them. Like they don't have all the horses, all the thoroughbreds that you need. They have some players like the rookies have been decent. Like that Watts has been decent. Pierce gets sacks. He's a DPR, but he gets sacks. Walker, when he's healthy, he's been fun, really fun player. I get all that, but they still need a lot. And if you game plan against them, you can catch them and you can get them. I think Pitts is one of the most interesting characters of this whole entire offseason. He's 25 years old, man. He's the youngest unrestricted free agent tight end. Daniel Bellinger from the Giants is actually an interesting guy too. Spotrac's got his market value prediction at $14.5 million. I think he gets 18. I would take a lovely shot on him if I had the space. And I'm like, if I had like a number one, I'm like, hey, I need some secondary guy. Oh my God. And you get ups because not, usually you pay guys, you're getting what you get. There's still room to grow. Like you don't get this a lot with these types of players. So yeah, the pass catching group's pretty interesting in the free agent class. So Romeo Doubs, Mike Evans, I brought him up, Alec Pierce. It's really curious kind of like who hits the market and what's out. But Kyle Pitts, I think his market's going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah, I would imagine they probably just franchise tag him because, like, man, because you're going to have to let Mooney walk. You're going to have to let Mooney go. You're going to have to cut Kirk probably. So, I mean, we saw what it was like this year when they didn't upgrade the receiver room, right? And they fired the receiver coach. When Drake London got hurt, there was no one left but Kyle Pitts. If Kyle Pitts is gone, you're even in a worse spot than you were before. So bring him back. Bring him back. Franchise tag him, extend him, whatever. Don't let him hit the market.
And then the Saints. All right, Shucksman. I think Rattler can be a nice little interesting trade chip for you. But also, I think Shucksman. The thing about Shuck, and I haven't really talked too much about him. I'll probably write about him or do a breakdown of all the first-year starters, something like that soon. But I thought Shuck was like a fine starter. I'm not like, and I think it's kind of been weird for me to see some of the kind of overhype, I would think, with a little bit. But I don't know. I feel like some people are getting out of their skeeves a little bit with how he plays. He takes a lot of sacks, like pressure to sack rate. He's a good runner. And I do think he makes some nice decisions with the football. I think Kellen Moore actually does a decent job designing plays and everything. But, you know, there's some game plan stuff or game management stuff that's a little iffy. But I don't know. I think that's where they're at in this year. I think really they can go another year with we'll see how he goes next year and then wait for the 2027 class, the Arch Manning number one pick class amongst others, potentially in that draft class. That could be very, very interesting. But I don't know. I think this year can't be anything looked at as anything more than success. The defense was super interesting with Staley. I think they got some, they have to figure out some of the older guys. I think offensively, the young offensive line has some cool. Kelvin Banks had a nice year. Chris Olave had finally a good year and then battled injuries, of course, but had one of those good years. I don't know. They're kind of in a weird spot, but I think next year is kind of another more 7-win-ish season. But hopefully you kind of build Shuck can be the real thing, or you realize what you have and kind of move on or make your next decision. But teams haven't really shown they're willing to do that as easily as I figured they would. So we'll see how that goes. We'll end this one with we're only going to do two lows, but this is kind of a multi-parter anyways. The Dolphins and Jets, AFC East teams just waving the white flag. Watch that Dolphins defense on that first touchdown drive for the Patriots. I think it was the first one. It was like two run plays, and it looked like one of those end of half moments where you're letting the other team score so you get the ball back. That's what it looked like. But it was like the first drive of the game. I'm like, this is the first drive? Like, you can play four quarters like this? But yeah, and you hit your third Hail Mary on the season.
I did.
Congratulations, Charles McDonald. You did.
I did not feel good about this, though. I said that the Bills backups could still beat the Jets by two touchdowns, which they did, a lot more than two touchdowns. And I felt bad watching this. I was like, this didn't feel like a Hail Mary when I was watching this. But also, man, this is like a Madden-style rebuild that you have to go through. It's like you gutted the team on purpose, which like they kind of did. But, dude, you're so far away. Like, oh, my God, you're so far away. I don't even think it matters like who the coach is right now. Like, you know, people saying fire Aaron Glenn. Whatever, this is not a talented football team. I don't know. Good luck. Good luck. Cause I really can't stress like they got blown out 35-8 by the Bills backups. Come on, man. Like something's got to give. Something's got to give.
And they finished with zero interceptions on the year. That's not possible. It is possible because it just happened, but zero interceptions is really, really hard to do. It's pretty bad. It's hard to feel. I like the A.D. Mitchell dice roll. I like the Jets' young offensive lineman. I'll give them that. Breece Hall's cool. The running back room's cool. Defensively, though, like, could you have kept one of Quinnen or Sauce? Because like, this isn't like there's not much. Because now you need to find another Quinnen and another Sauce and another linebacker and another defensive lineman and another DB. Just to get up to like average, and because it's so predictable, it's so easy to pick at. It's not a lot of talent. They have now the number two overall pick behind the Raiders. Top picks in the draft, by the way.
Quarterback
the top 10's locked in. Yeah, and I wouldn't be really excited because how Dante Moore played recently. So, and he might go back to school. So right, it might be a one quarterback draft. Maybe fall in love with Trinidad Chambliss, something of that sort. But that's a day two guy. But top picks of the draft: Raiders, Jets, Cardinals, Titans, Giants, Browns, Commanders, Saints, Chiefs, Bengals. Giants fans, like our friend Keegan Abdu, is just pulling his hair out. Just going like, because he could have the number one pick lined up for it. But man, this Jets team is. It's pretty aimless, man. It's pretty rough. It's pretty rough to watch. You know, it's hard to like say that's a building block. That's a building block. The Dolphins have given me a little bit more faith. I'm curious what they do with their head coach, with McDaniel. They have quarterback decisions to make. They have plenty of stuff, but they have at least a couple hits, and at least the offense was showing life, and the defense showed life for a little bit this year too. But any closing thoughts on the white flag AFC East teams?
It just feels like we've entered another cycle with them where, hey, I mean, at least the Bills are here this time, but the Patriots, they got a franchise quarterback. The Jets and the Dolphins are still at the bottom of the division. The Jets are worse than ever. And wow. I mean, like, if you're a Jets fan, when's the next time you're realistically saying, when can we win the AFC East? I don't know. Josh Allen ain't getting, he's not old. You might get another 8-10 years out of him. Drake May is only his second year. He might win the MVP.
They might be playing against the two most recent MVP team winners for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And you got no QB.
Good luck. Good
luck.
Tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't have anything. It's just really, offensive line. That's it.
Yeah, at least you got the O line. I'll give you that. At least you hit on my ball. The May finishes the year, Drake May, speaking of which, with a 54.1% dropback success rate. That's got to be up there with the highest ever. Breeze, I know, was up there in 2017, I think. But that's one of the highest I've ever seen. He finishes first in EPA per dropback. This is True Media's version. Pretty easily, 0.28 EPA per dropback. Love finished second with 0.22. Stafford's 3.20. Stafford's fourth in dropback success rate. Really, it's, of course, everyone's like, oh, Purdy this, Purdy that, who kind of got stifled this weekend. Mac Jones is third in success rate. So it's Purdy then the Mac Jones. That's a Kyle Shanahan stat. So yeah, but Stafford's up there above at 51% too. But I mean, whoever you want to go with those two, we'll talk about awards. Like I can't slouch, like can't bat an eye at it. I think those are two guys, May and Stafford, but I'd give it to May because of the Rams run game kind of gives them a little bump to May in the weirdest way, but Jets and Dolphins got some stuff to figure out. Extra credit, just to wrap up this show, we are going to look at the final playoff picture. We have the AFC, Broncos the 1 seed, the Patriots are the 2 seed, Jags 3, Ravens, Steelers winner at 4, Texans 5. We could do the Simpsons Mo beer thing. The Atlanta Falcons and the Denver Broncos. I don't know. Do you get that reference?
I was about to say.
Fine.
We have news. We have news. The LA Falcons have just fired Raheem Morris.
Yeah. Oh.
Out the door.
Thoughts?
Yep. I'm glad Arthur didn't take the cheese this time because he held on to Dan Quinn too long last time. So I'm glad he didn't make that mistake this time. Sucks. Obviously wanted to work out, but hey, call a spade a spade. Yeah. It was not good. It was disorganized and it was clunky. Yeah,
it was right. Disorganized is the best way. Raheem's game management stuff left a lot to be desired. And it was just a repeat of all the end of half scenarios that happen. Like that, that's what you control if you're not calling plays. And that's, to me, that's kind of like what my intent is at. The receiver firing, all that's, it's just, they're very messy right now. But I'm curious who they go for. I mean, if Stefanski gets fired, can't like really hate that.
That would make so much sense. Like he's already good for the personnel they have too. And then, you know, figure out quarterback in 2027. I'll take him.
And he can get the most out of either guy. Like if it was Penix or whatever with Cousins, but like that, either of those fit. Like with, I know he likes to do some under center stuff, but he can make that work. Yeah. I know. I like Raheem as a dude. And it was disappointing. I mean, we talk about the Falcons a lot. Not even just with your fandom. They're just an interesting team because of good and bad. Interesting couldn't be bad too. But yeah, I think this was needed. I think they needed a full reset on all this. They've made a lot of bets, and a lot of those bets just have not looked good outside of course, Bijan and Drake London and all that stuff. But a lot of the bets are just crapping out right now. Playoff picture, finishing it off. Jags or Texans 5 seed, Bills 6 seed, Chargers 7 seed. So we're going to have Patriots versus Chargers, Jags versus Bills, and then Texans facing the AFC North winner. Seahawks 1 seed in the NFC, Bears the 2 seed playing the Packers, the 7 seed. That's fun. I really dig that. Like we said, the Eagles play the 49ers. That's going to be a fun one to break down too. And then Panthers, Rams, and we basically already broke down that game. I think we could chalk up our prediction already for that game. That one's already done. I don't know, do any research. I know how I feel about that one. Any of these matchups, any of these teams as we close out the show, Chuck, that you're excited to break down later this week?
Bills, Jags, like I would love to press play on that game right now. That's going to be a lot of fun. And I think for the NFC, I think the divisional round is going to be like where the sweet spot is for them. Because, you know, mm-hmm. we'll get rid of, you know, probably the Panthers, and then we'll whittle down whatever's left of the Packers and the Bears. And then we can get to the meat of it, like bring the Seahawks back in and see where they're playing. So I'm pumped, man. Like, this is going to be fun. I was a little bummed out that, like, you know, there is a world where there might not be like Pat or Lamar or Joe Burrow, which who have kind of become like the playoff figures we've become accustomed with. But it's never a bad thing to get new blood in there, guys. You know, don't forget that. It's 32 teams. 32 teams. You will see Pat Mahomes in the playoff again. I promise you. So just have some fun with this year.
Plenty of fun quarterbacks, man. I mean, you got May, Trevor Lawrence, Stroud's fun, Josh Allen, and Justin Herbert. And, like, you know, we're not hot, super high on Bo Nix. I always see him run around a little bit and make some plays. So at least that's fun. And Sean Payton's calling plays. That's fun offenses, at least to me. Even if the Chargers offensive line is tragic. Sorry, Trey Lance, you had to survive that today. That was absolutely horrid, that game. Whenever I watched that Chargers Broncos game, and yeah, Broncos, I know you get the one seed. We're not really talking about you today, but that game was so ugly. We'll talk plenty about you in a couple weeks in the divisional round. Yeah, and then the NFC, Seahawks offense is fine enough. They're explosive. You got Jason and everything, and their defense is sick. The Bears offense is super fun. Eagles defense, top three defense in every metric and every eye test you can look at. And the offense is explosive. That's me. That's how I can compliment them. Got to see some Tanner McKee today, which is fun. Rams have one of the best offenses we've seen this millennium. 49ers have a super fun offense. Their defense is stinky. And then the Packers have a really good offense still. I know Malik Willis has caught everyone's eye and everything. We got to see some Clayton Tune today, the tank commander. But no, I like when Jordan Love's out there, that's a very explosive, very fun offense. So it's going to be a fun, fun dance. Can't wait to talk with you about it, my friend Charles. Thanks for joining me. That was fun. We'll be back Tuesday. Me, you, and Matt.
Yes.
Here's some threesome.
Sorry.
Yeah, we're going to be doing awards or like an all football 301 team. Haven't exactly decided, kind of like a, they used to do like the all Madden team kind of thing, you know, guys that we like, guys that we dig. And we'll figure it out. It'll be fun. But I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on Blue Sky. That is Charles McDonald. You can find him at Forverts on Blue Sky. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us, watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Also subscribe to the Yahoo NBA channel. Like I said, at the beginning of the show, thanks to Stone, Awesome Ass, and Behind the Scenes for making us look and sound good. Enjoy the Sunday night football game, deciding that last playoff spot. We'll chat about that. You can listen to the podcast version of that later or here on Yahoo, the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel as well. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.